Hello, you're listening to SEMO Spotlight. I'm Lily Niebergi, and today I'm sitting down with the director of the Center for Civic Engagement and Democratic Practices, Dr. Laura Hatcher. She's been at the university for 12 years and teaching for 27. Dr. Hatcher, thank you for being here. Can you just start by talking about the Civic Engagement and Democratic Practices Center?
So the center is a new activity. The College of Humanities and Social Sciences leadership team had been having conversations about how it was that we had so many students doing so many great things for the community and for the state, and that we needed to find a way to make that clearer to the public, that this was all coming out of the College of Humanities and Social Sciences, and that this was a special feature, actually, of our students, that they are always outward looking and wanting to do things to serve the public. And so one day I said, you know what we do? We need a center. And so that was like back in, I don't know, December or January. So we spent a few minutes just kind of brainstorming what the center would look like. And then finally the dean said to me, why don't you go ahead and come up with a plan and see what you have. And he gave me, you know, we're in the middle of mergers and doing all this other stuff. So he gave me some time and space to do that. But I went ahead and wrote up a game plan for it. And basically the center is going to be working on helping and supporting the various departments in some of their external work on behalf of communities. So, political science, we have the ICMA, the International City Management Association, and they are actually, as a student chapter, required to do one public service activity a year, like something external. So right now they're working on a needs assessment for a nonprofit that has grant money that they're going to be giving out. And so they're trying to ascertain through interviews and survey work what the needs of the community are for nonprofit funding. So we have these organizations, you know, Historic Preservation, the Cold Case Club, we have all of this doing all of these things, some of which gets public attention, but some of which is not getting as much public attention as it deserves. And so the center is going to help do that, also help put on some programs. We're talking about some programming I can't talk about yet, and basically supporting that and providing students with hopefully even more opportunities to do this kind of work.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So you're from Minnesota, correct?
I am.
Yeah. What brought you to Southeast Missouri?
Well, actually, I left Minnesota when I was 16, and I won't say how old I was, but that was a few decades back. I went to school in Utah, the University of Utah. And then from there, I went to Massachusetts for my graduate work. So it's been a circuitous route. But when I first came to Southeast Missouri, I was actually overworking at SAU Carbondale. And I came over to do some work in Kent Library. And my research assistant and I were walking around, and he's like, this is a really nice campus. And I'm like, yeah, I could totally see myself working here. And it was just such a funny little comment that I made. And he kind of looked at me and said, okay, don't do that until I graduate, okay? Then it wasn't long after that they posted an ad, and I thought, that's perfect. And so I made the jump. I liked the town. I liked the community in the town, and I really appreciated the university. And when I interviewed here, I was flabbergasted at the kindheartedness of the students and how much the faculty in political science, philosophy, and religion really, really cared about making sure their students had a good experience.
So what made you want to pursue teaching in the first place?
Also a circuitous route. So when I was an undergrad, like many undergrads, I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. So I ended up triple majoring in English, linguistics, and political science. I was pretty clear that I wanted to be social science. I loved writing, which was why I'd started as an English major. But linguistics introduced me to, there's a side of linguistics that's very social science-y, and I love that. And my father kept telling me to be a journalist, actually, and to be a writer. And so he wanted me to take some political science classes because he thought that that would be good backgrounding for that. But I fell in love with political science. I was in love with linguistics and in love with political science. So I got done with my degree, and I was trying to figure out, do I want to go to law school? Do I want to get a PhD? What should I do? And so I took some gap time and actually spent some time working in a law firm, the biggest law firm between San Francisco and Colorado, Denver, Convolver.
That's pretty impressive.
Parsons, Bailey, and Latimer. It was a temp job, you know, but I was working for some pretty high-up lawyers in the firm, and one day the the managing partner there came up and he said, hey, I heard that you're thinking about going to law school. And I said, I am. And he said, you'd be great at law school. You'd be brilliant and you'd be a brilliant lawyer. None of that is, the next thing I say, you should not think that I'm telling you not to go to law school. And I said, okay. And then he said, but you're going to be bored. You're going to be really bored with being a lawyer because your mind is not the mind of a lawyer. You have the mind of, and he said, and understand, my wife teaches at the University of Utah, so understand, this is a good thing. You have the mind of a professor. And he said, even the way you explain things, I'm going to tell you to go back and talk to your faculty and see if you should go get a PhD. And he said, but if that doesn't work out, go to law school. And I was like, okay. So I went back and I talked to a couple of my professors and they were like, finally, yes. Yeah, that's what you should do. So I sent in some applications and I ended up at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, which is a department that has a very theoretical side, a very practical side that blends together and supports a very strong legal studies community. And so I ended up bringing the law into my PhD program, and that's how I ended up there. And then they put me in the classroom 3 years in. So I've been there for a while.
So you've just been all over the country.
Yeah.
What's like something like a success story from like one of your students that you'd be willing to share?
Oh, there's so many. We have great students at Southeast Missouri State. Currently, maybe one of my favorite success stories is the student who started with us a few years ago and came in. He was so smart and he was so quiet and so shy. He ended up double majoring in political science and economics because he was that bright. And that's a hard combination. And he had minors in, Spanish and I want to say global studies. And so he was busy. Straight A student, and then studied for the LSAT for about 4 months, and then went and took it, and called me up afterwards and said, "I think I bombed it. I did terribly, and I feel like I should cancel that score." And I said, "Do not cancel that score until you see the number." Thank God he didn't, because he got a perfect score on the LSAT, which is less than 1% of students do that.
That's crazy.
So he comes in and he says, "I got a perfect score on the LSAT." And I said, "Oh my God, so what law school do you want to go to? Because you're going to get to go anywhere." And he looked at me and he says, "Do you think it was a mistake?" And I said, "You mean, do I think that the law school admissions council misgraded your exam?" And he goes, "Yes." And I said, "No, they did not." And even if they did, we're going with it. And so he ended up fielding offers from all over the place, including Harvard and Yale. And he ended up at Yale because it was a nice small Yale accepts a small cohort, and they want to make sure that every student they accept actually eventually makes it through. And he liked that model better than the Harvard model, which is accept a large cohort and then flunk out the people who don't belong. So he ended up at Yale, and now he is a clerk in the DC Circuit.
Wow.
I know. And any of my pre-law students know that the DC Circuit is a special place. So it is a place that feeds into Supreme Court clerkships as well as Supreme Court justices someday. So he's well on his way to doing great things.
Wow, that is really impressive.
Yeah. But we've had on the other side of the department, because we aren't just a pre-law program, obviously. And in fact, about half or more of our students are going to go out and do other things. One of our alums is had been working in Congressman Alford's office and just recently moved into the governor's office to do, I think, policy analysis and communications. We've had students, we actually have students all over the state from the MPA program, as well as all over Cape Girardeau. Councilwoman Tamika Randall is one of our MPA alums. Dr. Tamara Buck has an MPA, and she's, of course, an amazing person. I actually was contemplating that we need to put together a pile of stories about our students and how amazing they are, from recently Will Erpenbach, who's been spotlighted on the SEMO website for doing great work both as an alderman out in, where is he? out in Missouri, and who is now on scholarship at SLU, to students like Caleb Fahoney, who also was recently spotlighted by SEMO as an alum because he's running a really great economic development group out in Nebraska with his MPA degree. So we have lots of people who are doing lots of great things.
That's spectacular. Just my last question for you. What makes like politics, religion, philosophy such like a valuable field to study in?
So those are three different fields, right? And we don't study, we aren't, the field isn't politics. The field is political science. And then we have subfields. And our subfields in this department are American politics, comparative politics and international relations, political theory, and public administration. So what makes it so valuable is that I liken it to learning how to read the rules on the top of the box of a game, a complicated game. Political science teaches you the rules that everything is being played by, and also the kind of rational decision making, or sometimes seemingly irrational decision making, that is going on as people try to get what they need in order to live and survive and to make sure that their communities are well structured, right? So political science is interested in law, it's interested in government. Public administration is really, really interested in how bureaucracies work. So no matter what you do, these things are going to touch your life. And so knowing about them and understanding them makes things better and helps you do a better job regardless of what major you are. And philosophy gives you ethics. It gives you a lot of critical and analytical thinking. Pre-law students should all take philosophy. In fact, we require them to. And religion, again, teaches you something not just about ethical living, but about the various beliefs you're going to encounter in the world, and how to understand them and how to make sense of them. And so all three of those parts of the old department really came together around ideas of critical thinking, analytical thinking, really good reading and writing skills, and being able to assess what is happening around you so that you can make better decisions for yourself, for your family, and for your community.
Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Hatcher. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome, Lily.